the operator there?
Yes, the recordings are started.
Great, thank you.
Thanks. My name is Marilyn Cade. I am the chair of the business constituency and an alternate to the CSG. I'd like to make a proposal to the room for a topic that we might discuss in the non-contracted user house segment that's on the agenda. I will just say that before we leave here, maybe we can also figure out in the, at the, and maybe it's the CSG, maybe it's some other approach working with the rest of the House on what the process would be for us to develop further agendas and reach agreement on not only agendas, but how we're going to work as half houses as well as the full House on any topics and meetings we need to have. But for this morning, what I'd like to propose the primary focus be is a discussion on the review panel participation selection process. I'm choosing my words very carefully. And the evaluation activities that go on within the stakeholder groups and then at the council level on the two additional positions. So that's the primary topic that I'd like to put forward from the CSG side. There may be other topics that others want to add.
Hello, everybody. We weren't even sure whether the meeting was happening because the we weren't sure that the... I'm sorry? Oh, this is Bill Drake. I'm sorry. We weren't sure the meeting was happening. The email prior was kind of ambiguous. So we didn't come in with any fixed agenda. There were some suggestions made briefly by Avery, who is not here, I guess, who's the NCSG chair, that we should spend an hour on substantive and then an hour on procedural aspects. And we suggested let's try and talk about what items we would fill in under that, and there was no discussion ensuing. So since then, we haven't really specified anything in particular. Obviously, we do need to. We are going to have a vote in the houses on the review two review team slots, and so certainly we should talk about that. No question. I don't know. Are there other joint areas that we need to act on? Olga, by the way, if people don't know, sent an email this morning saying that she could not attend. Her child is sick, so she's still in Buenos Aires. So we don't have our house chair. So are there other areas NCSG people might identify that they think we need to talk about beyond the House vote on the review team slots? Anything? Mary? I'm sure Mary's got something.
I think that's something that we could probably talk about to the extent that there's probably some things that both sides of this House need to discuss. So perhaps we could start with that.
I could follow up. It's Marilyn Cade. Marco has joined us, and I understand is the most knowledgeable staff person on this process. So what I'd propose we do is to kick this off and deal with that topic. I'll just make one comment. We don't have a chair of the CSG House at this point. So the CSG representatives are getting together and talking about agenda items, but going back to the constituencies. So you know, we might let's deal with the first topic and see how much time we have, and then we'll see what kind of agreement there is, if there's any other topic, or if we have time. We also need to figure out if we need to meet again as a house. But maybe we could just go to this topic and go to Marco and ask him to quickly explain the process to us, because I know you have a limited time.
Yeah. No, but with pleasure.
Okay. Is that okay with everyone? Seeing assent, I'm turning this microphone over. No, I'm turning Liz's microphone over to Marco.
So, are you more interested in the processes, so what has been done in so far, or in the call for applicants of the for the affirmation reviews? Both? Okay, a few minutes on one issue and a few minutes on the other issue. Okay, so let's start with the processes. As you know, we published in, it was the 26th of December, a discussion paper containing some draft proposals on how to organize the review processes. And we ran the consultation for 46 days. A pretty large number of comments received, so 32 from the top of my head, which is pretty a success for review-related public comment periods. Main focus of the comments were on the methodology. Some supported the proposed methodology. Others considered that the methodology was too prescriptive. Others, on the contrary, were of the opposite view, so the methodology was not specific enough. Several comments on size of the review teams. On this, the very large majority of community wanted the teams larger than the original proposed size. So the original proposed size was for a team between 6 and 8, and the community strongly is opposed to this proposal. So requests are for teams that are spanning from 12 to 15. So there are different proposals, and all of them have been consolidated in the final comments. Other comments were on timeline. Sorry. As you know, the timeline is pretty aggressive because we have to cope with a very final deadline, which is end of December this year for the first of the review, so accountability, transparency. So the majority of comments acknowledge this kind of external constraint, but ask for, in any case, to respect all the public comment culture that we have in ICANN in order to ensure that sufficient time is allowed to community to give inputs on the key review phases. Other comment, there has been a very interesting discussion on public interest. That was indeed the first discussion that happened on this public comment. So what kind of public interest is ICANN supposed to serve? Is there the need to define this public interest function of ICANN before even starting the review process? And who has to be involved in this kind of discussion? And several comments were received on that. So all comments have been consolidated as normal practice, and they have been published mid-February, 15 or 16 of February, something like that. The intention now is not to prepare a second version of the paper. The paper had a main function, which was really to catalyze the discussion from the community. And it served this purpose. Now the definition of the methodology will be in the hands of the review teams. So the review teams will have to select their own working methodologies, and they will be provided with both the original proposal and all the comments that we have received and the consolidated comments. This is the present state of thinking, unless the board would decide to go for a consolidation of the methodology, but this is the present state of thinking. On the second aspect, which is the call for applicants, the call for applicants is still open. We extended twice the final deadline for the call for volunteer volunteers wishing to be members of the review teams, and the final deadline is tomorrow at 23:59 UTC. We received insofar something like 16, 17 applications. The majority of them came from GNSO and ALAC community. Other applications should arrive today and tomorrow. We are still expecting some applications from... maybe there is an additional application from GAC. Sorry, I forgot to mention that we got also 3 applications from GAC. We have been announced some applications from CCNSO and ASO, so we should receive them by tomorrow. Then, after this deadline, the different supporting organizations will have till the 17th of March to inform of their endorsement or not endorsement of the different candidatures. So this is the present situation. We are about 1 month late in relation to the original plans. This is due mainly to the fact that the deadline for the call for applicants has been extended twice. So it is extremely urgent now that the two selectors of the first review team will make the final decision about the composition of the team by maximum the end of March, in order them to start the work beginning of April, so they can respect the final deadline. I don't know if you want some more details on some phases. I'm here for any question, please.
Has there been any clarification about how many slots on the review team there will actually be for the GNSO?
No decision yet, and the call was launched even before discussion on this. Any decision will be entirely in the hands of the two selectors. There have been different proposals from GNSO, for instance, and from other members of the community on different architectures. Some proposals.
No, leave it up. I've got to do one more.
Can you please mute your lines when not talking? Thank you.
Okay. Also, can you state your name when you are talking?
So some propose two, some propose four. There are really different proposals, and they have to be considered by the two selectors, who are, I remember, the chair of the board and the chair of the GAC for the final decision on that.
Thank you, Marco. Ron Androff, business constituency. Thank you very much for clarifying all of that for us. Very important. You made a comment about the review teams will select their own methodology, and I just want to understand, is that the review teams who will make the selection of the review teams, or is that the final review teams who will actually then make a methodology? Because I'm a little concerned, if you're going to establish a group of people, then they will figure out how they're going to review the AOC, or, for example. That's where I'm a little confused.
You're right, and there is also a question of terminology. Okay, so let's call selectors the two persons that will make the selection of the composition of the review team. And in the case of the first affirmation, review, so accountability to transparency, as you know, are Peter Dengay Trust and Yanis Karklings. And let's call review teams the group of people who will make the review. So the review teams will decide their methodology.
But just to make a clarification, it's Marilyn Kate speaking. They're deciding their methodology, but they're not deciding the topic, which is already pre-established.
Oh, right.
Secondly, I believe that they have to develop a TRO. As I look at this process, Marco, I believe there are four or five public comment processes along the way, one of them being in relation to the TOR, the terms of reference, that the panel would develop and then put forward. Is that right?
There has been just one public consultation phase. In this public consultation phase, we had the full discussion paper under comment, and the discussion paper contained a proposed methodology for conducting the review and proposed terms of reference for the first review team. And as you rightly say, of course, the review team cannot decide the subject of the review because it has been already established in the affirmation of commitment.
Do we have other questions for Marco? Because the other thing I think we want to talk about is also the process within the SGs and then the related activities within the House while learning this new terminology. That was Marilyn Cade speaking. Any other questions for Marco? I have one question. Marco, having read all of the public comments, which you, of course, expect of me. I noted that there were a number of comments, as you said, that called for the size of the review panel to be larger than 6 to 8. The community seems to feel very strongly about this, and I think, as I read it, there's broad agreement across the stakeholders of ICANN that the idea of a panel of 6 to 8 is too limited. There are reasons you know, some of us might question the single authoritative suggestion about organizational development methodologies, but we have other challenges. We have geographic diversity. We have some gender diversity issues. We have cultural issues. And we have really scope and scale of the kinds of topics that have to be addressed in the assessing accountability and transparency. So given the community feels so strongly about this, what's the, and there is going to be a session on this topic, right? Will there be an opportunity for public comment from the floor?
Definitely, yeah, definitely so. There will be opportunity for public comments on the floor, on the session of on affirmation reviews. And as I said, I mean, staff doesn't have a voice on this. The decision is to be made really by the two selectors. So Marilyn is absolutely right when she said the large majority of the community was against the hypothesis of having small-sized teams. And this is what the selectors have in their hands for making the decision.
Steve Del Bianco with the Business Constituency. Marco, I wanted to ask whether you had read into 9.1 in the affirmation of commitments, the section that establishes the team size. This is a follow-up to Marilyn's question. Because a lot of us will read the way that that agreement between ICANN and the parties that have signed it so far, U.S. being the first, I guess, it says, it enumerates a GAC chair, enumerates two or three others, and then it says, and representatives, plural, from the following stakeholder groups. And do you interpret that to accommodate multiple representatives from each of the stakeholder groups? And would the agreement have to be modified or amended to accommodate an increase in the number of seats?
Well, this can be an outcome of the review, for instance.
But the review, what I'm talking about is 9.1, which describes the first review, the accountability review.
Yeah.
So for that review panel to come together, it has to figure out how many people it should and can have on it. And if you read the middle paragraphs, it does enumerate one from the GAC. It enumerates representatives, plural, from the stakeholder groups. So if, for instance, there were to be more than one GAC representative, does that require that ICANN and the Commerce Department amend this agreement? Or can we just simply interpret it in a way that allows multiple representatives?
Difficult question. Difficult question, even because I told you, I mean, it's not up to staff to decide the size of the review team. Of course, affirmation is something that needs to be interpreted. And comments of the community are pretty univocal and going in the same direction on this.
And I would hope, just to close, I would hope that we can all agree to interpret the agreement to having some flexibility to accommodate the widespread desire to increase the size of that first team. But thank you.
I saw Zaid and then Wolf, and then I'm going to close this down and move to the next segment, unless there's one more person.
Thank you. My name is Zaid Jamil. What I wanted to ask was, in the review panel, the setup, just sort of follow up to what's... Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. The question that Steve raised. The word says it includes. So includes the GAC chair, the board chair, representatives of the division SO AXOs. Does that mean that, in effect, you could have representatives of each and every AXO, the two board chairs, and you could actually then, apart from independent experts, which you're going to get other people? Now, how are we, or is there a process to identify those other people, and is there a number that's already in mind as to how many those others, if I can call them that, will be?
Marco Lorenzo here. It's interesting because the affirmation reviews, in fact, spells out for the first review team the GAC chair or a nominee or a delegate, the board chair or a delegate, a representative from NTAA, volunteer members of the relevant supporting organization and advisory committee. So here there is an issue to be solved by selectors about the relevancy of the different supporting organizations, for instance, to the scope of each review. And then it mentions independent experts. So doesn't say anything about the number of independent experts and what area of expertise need to be represented. We got some comments during the public comment about the area of expertise that need to be involved in this first review process. For instance, corporate governance or transparency. I mean, we had some comments in this sense. We also have a couple of comments that focus on the need to put more independent experts within the review team, in order to bring some external views into the process. So there has been discussion on this, but still, as I say, no decision has been taken about the final size and composition of the team, which is under discussion by the selectors.
Can I have a follow-up on that? So, no, I understand. Okay, so one of my questions got answered. We don't know what the size will be, but the composition is their categories. So there's the board chair, GAC chair, and actual representatives and independent experts. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't say limited to these people. It says it could include these people. That means there's another unknown out there sort of other category that could be developed. People could be pulled into this review team other than being representatives of the AXOs. If I could just read out, it says, will include the following. And I'm just wondering whether that is being interpreted by us as being restricted to the people listed or sort of open-ended.
Well, we receive no comments in this sense. It's very interesting, by the way, the point you made, but we receive no comments in this sense. My interpretation, but once again, I mean, it's a kind of interpretation based on the comments we receive. My interpretation is that very likely those who responded to the public comments considered others under the category independent experts. I imagine, because really we didn't get any comment on in this sense.
Follow up. So when we say others, this brings up a very interesting question. So there are those who've applied as independents. So there's the question of those who are going to be as independents, what process by which are they going to be selected? Are they just people that could just be picked up by the selectors and there's no specific criteria per se apart from their, you know, criteria of who they are, et cetera, but no specific process for the selectors, but there is a process for the GNSO. Just wanted to get a clarification. What applies to these independents?
There have been a couple, even more, I think three, four comments, particularly from within GNSO and within ALEC, asking to be involved as community in the identification of the independent expert to be selected. So not to leave this selection only in the hands of the selectors, but having a dialogue with the community on their identity, or at least on the areas of expertise they have to represent.
My name is Wolf Ulrich-Nohm from the ISP constituency. Marco, one question to the process. So after the deadline on Sunday, are you going to send all the applications to all of the supporting organizations, or are you going to filter out to which SO you are going to allocate candidates, or what's the process?
Yeah, no, we are going to, we are indeed already sending all the applications to the different supporting organizations. So we are receiving, as you imagine, applications that are already complete and other applications that miss some essential data. For instance, some applicants did not mention the supporting organization they wish to represent. In this case, we go back immediately to the applicants and they usually respond in one day or in a few hours, giving the further details. In particular for GNSO, there is a further set of information to be provided, and in case this set of information is not provided immediately, it's usually provided in the following day, something like that. We are sending the application immediately after they are completed. So in order the different supporting organizations to have them immediately, and the last sending will be done on Monday morning. First thing on Monday morning.
Okay, just an additional question. So, how you avoid that there will be, let me say, two SOs How are you going to avoid that maybe two or more as always will manage or handle the same candidates? You know, that means so...
It happened indeed that the first candidate was not sure about the supporting organization he wishes to represent. So in this case, we gave the contacts to this candidate of the two different supporting organizations that were mentioned, giving him the choice to select one of them. And then the selection was made, and the application is, has been sent to the finally selected supporting organization.
Okay. Marco, this is Bill Drake, further to Wolf's question. If I understood you correctly, you said you're sending them all out to everybody. We have only, in GNSO, we've only received the ones that said that they're applying for GNSO.
Yeah, we are sending, I mean, to the GNSO, those applications mentioning the intention okay. to represent GNSO.
But shouldn't there be a web page with all of the applicants so that we can look at the entire pool? And understand.
Yeah, it is our intention as soon as we close the application to publish okay. all the candidatures, including okay. all the supporting documents to the candidatures. And this has been mentioned explicitly in the call for applicants.
Okay, it's Marilyn. I'm going to thank Marco and pleasure. Take us to the next set of discussions, which are more about our internal activities related to this. I'm going to propose we do a roll call because I think for purposes of the discussion, it's helpful for us to just have a record of everyone that's in the room. And I'll start by saying Oh, Glenn's going to do it. Fantastic, Glenn. Thank you. And also probably, yes.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Shall I start from the side? Bill Drake, Wendy Seltzer, Rafik Damak, Jamie Wagner, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, Amadeo Abril, Mary Wong, Ron Andruff, Steve Del Bianco, Saeed Jamil, and for staff we have over there Olaf Nordling, Marika Koenigs, and Liz Gaster. And at the back, as participants, Thomas Rusler, Brendan Kirbis, Norbert Klein, Barry Cobb, and Flavio Wagner, Alon Bidron, and Martin Sutton. And somebody has just walked into the room. I'll get their names.
Can those of you that are on the phone bridge please identify yourselves so we can take note of that?
Oh, yeah, you've got David Taylor, yeah.
Could you please say that again?
Werner Staub.
And Alex Gakura has just joined us in the room.
Are there any others on
Michael the... Michael Kahn here.
Sorry, I didn't catch...
Can you hear me?
Was Michael Connor, no?
Yes, I've got several in LinkedIn I could mention. We have Jonathan Frakes, Paul Diaz, James Guaido, Tim Ruiz, June Song Marshall, and Michael Connor.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on the conference bridge?
Mike Pelage.
Mike Pelage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Taylor as well.
Thank you, David.
So, could I... I'm told that maybe, Bill, you or someone else might actually be the most expert on the discussion on the internal process. If we could just do a quick making sure everybody has a good grasp of the internal process as we understand it, and then talk about any unresolved areas or questions of where we may need to work as a house or just make sure that information flow happens into the council. But do you mind starting with kind of the overview of the internal process within the,
that's fine.
The SGs?
Bill Drake. The process that the drafting team put together, that the council approved, and it's, was it the last call, I guess, is as follows. The council will nominate up to six people, although we don't know how many will actually be taken by the selectors. We're hoping at least two. Of course, I should preface by saying this whole kind of mechanism was defined before we had any idea what the pool was going to look like, and as it turns out, the pool is pretty small, which may make some of the bureaucratic steps that we defined unnecessary. But on the other hand, even if it turns out that that's the case, since we had to essentially decide that due to the very compressed time frame and the fact that the dates kept slipping and changing when we weren't able to figure out how we were going to make all the stuff work, we decided to essentially say this would be a one-time process and that a final process will be approved in April by the drafting team to recommend to the GNSO. It may well be that even if we don't end up using some aspects of this process that we've defined for this time fully, that at least we will have learned something through the process of defining it that we'll be able to take forward in review team rounds that are less compressed. So that said, what we did was the following. First to say, just simply because of the diversity of interests and the fact that it was probably going to be difficult for everybody to agree on one or two candidates that would represent the entire GNSO, we decided that we would try to depoliticize the process by basically saying up front that each stakeholder group can nominate one person who would essentially be, so each stakeholder group essentially gets a fixed allocation. So you can be sure that your stakeholder group will have somebody in the pool that the selectors will look at. But then, of course, we didn't want to limit it to that because that could be construed as essentially fixing a kind of very insider type of game where only those who are actively engaged in stakeholder groups could be put forward as nominees to represent the GNSO. This would leave out, for example, not just NCAs, but any other persons who don't see themselves as being particularly affiliated or primarily affiliated with one group or another. So we wanted to have some possibility for other people to be considered as well. So we ended up deciding to have two more slots and to have those slots be open to competitive selection and a voting process. And the voting process is simply that they to go forward as a GNSO nominee, person would have to get a majority vote of both houses. Now, there's some questions about what happens if that doesn't work, and we can return to that point. So there's two slots that would be like that. One is reserved for people who are not affiliated or do not see themselves as being affiliated with a particular group unless we are able to clearly identify that they are indeed active in a stakeholder group, in which case we would treat them as being part of that stakeholder group. And then one other slot that's essentially open to anybody, which can mean essentially that stakeholder groups can put forward additional candidates, up to two, and the House will vote. And if it turns out that, say, the registries end up with two, well, then that's fine. If both houses voted for a person, then that's okay. So then you would have a pool of six from which the selectors would pick. Hopefully, this would give them enough options to be able to define the team that makes sense in relationship to the larger mix that they're putting together from the other SOs and ACs. The problem, of course, then becomes, number one, ensuring diversity. Some of us felt strongly that there should be geographic and gender diversity in the pool that the GNSO puts forward. Others were less certain that that should be hardwired into the process, so we went with a sort of compromise type formulation that says essentially unless the applicant pool does not allow, no more than two nominees should come from the same geographic region. That's to say, if we don't have enough people to make that objective realized, then okay, fine. Similarly, unless the applicant pool does not allow, nominees must not all be of the same gender, and the distribution between genders should be no greater than two-thirds to one-third. So in other words, hopefully, if there were six nominees being put forward from the GNSO, we would not have six white guys from the United States. We would have instead, hopefully, at least two women in the pool of six, and hopefully we would have not more than two people from the same region. Now, this is should language, and of course it's aspirational, and if at the end of the day that's unsustainable, then we have to deal with that reality, and it would be unsustainable if the applicant pool doesn't provide the range of people, the range of names to be able to even get to that. If the diversity goals are not met after the first round, let's say the four stakeholder groups have all put forward a name and the House has voted two additional names, and we look at it and we go, oh, well, we ended up with a very non-diverse group, then we put in place a mechanism to try to deal with that. And that mechanism was, in the first instance, there's something called an evaluation team that will be performing a certain function of assessing the candidates and making some recommendations to try to help the council decide and how the ET will work is a whole other set of questions we can get into, because the assumption was when we did this, we might have a large pool and not everybody would be able to read all the applications. I'll come to you in a second, Jamie. We decided to create this evaluation team to serve that function. But in addition, in the event that we ended up with a non-diverse pool, we would ask the evaluation team to consult with stakeholder groups and the NOMCOM appointees and with the candidates and try and see if perhaps we can come to some sort of more flexibly defined compromise that would bring us closer to the diversity objectives. That's a work in progress, exactly how that's going to work. Now, actually, given the nature of the stakeholder, given the nature of the pool, I think it's probably not going to be the case that we'll have to use that mechanism, but we don't know for sure yet until we see the final results.
Bill, would you stop and take questions?
I will stop right now, and then there's a number of different dimensions to come back to. So, Jamie?
Jamie Wagner, I have one question to Bill. You said that the two slots in the pool would be covered by one of non-affiliated people and another from people indicated by the SGs that were not selected as the first person. But did I understand that you said that this should be limited to two people per SG? Or, if we have 10 people and we choose one, the 9 don't go automatically to the pool?
Each stakeholder group can nominate up to 2 people for that competitive slot. That was the agreement we made.
Okay. And do we have, could you please...
Sorry, we didn't hear your answer.
You didn't hear my answer?
I said that the agreement was that each stakeholder group could nominate up to 2 people for that open slot. So in principle, then, each stakeholder group is putting forward a total of 3 names, one for the allocated slot that will be guaranteed to be in the nominee pool, and then 2 other names that might be considered in a competitive election for the 5th slot.
Yeah, it's just that this is an understanding I didn't have. Okay, it's a correction to my previous understanding. Thank you for that. And also, I would ask another question to the. Do we have? Could you please help me to understand the schedule we have ahead? each day because it's a tight schedule, and I think we are many things will have to be covered here in Nairobi. So who has the schedule?
Thank you. Bill Drake again. The schedule is as follows. And there was, by the way, a action plan that we approved in the council, which had the preliminary dates, but then we had to change things because of subsequent changes that were given to us by staff about the deadlines. And so we sent out email, I believe, on the council list with the final timeline, but I'll repeat again. So the applications are due at ICANN by March 7, okay, which is tomorrow. By, I assume that's, what was it, probably 2359 UTC? Okay. Then by the 14th of March, stakeholder groups are to notify the GNSO Secretariat of their nominations and provide guidance to their counselors on the votes for the two slots. This means, ideally, what I would hope will happen, on Constituency Day, it would be really ideal if each stakeholder group could get their act together and decide who they want. Because no later than the 14th they have to notify. But obviously the earlier the better, because in parallel the evaluation team has to be looking at the files and making some suggestions. Okay? So the 14th is the drop-dead date for the stakeholder groups to notify the Secretariat. So if it's possible for the CSG to reach closure at its meeting, that'd be fantastic. I know that NCSG, I believe, will have its nominations by the 10th and be able to notify. So that's that. Then in parallel, now I have to come back to the... Well, let me just do the timeline, and then I'll come back to the what the evaluation team is about. By the 14th, the same date, and unfortunately this is very compressed and in some ways illogical in my view, the evaluation team is to report to the council on its assessment of the candidates that have been submitted. Now, I'll talk more about what the ET is going to do, but that has to be done by the same date because of the tight deadline. Then we will have a council vote. Glenn, do we have a final date on the vote, on when that meeting is? When the vote will be? We did a doodle, right? But
it has to be by the 17th, doesn't it?
No, we have to notify the selectors by the
17th. So we have to get it done by the 17th.
Right. But we should do it before. We have to do it earlier than that. And I think we were shooting for the 15th in case there has to be any post hoc tweaking from a diversity standpoint or anything else. So there was a doodle sent around, and I don't recall what the status was. But ideally, the council will be having a special call on the 15th or maybe the 16th, during which the two houses would vote. So that's the basic timeline, 7th, 14th, and then 15th or 16th for the vote.
Thank you, Bill.
So my follow-up question is, Marilyn, Bill, just to reiterate here, so what we're saying that the evaluators, and each of the SGs has selected an evaluator, right? The evaluators, that's four people, are going to be working in parallel using all of the candidate information that they have received while the SGs are also making their decision of the one plus two alternates. So let me just give you a hypothetical. Let's say that the CSG ends up with six candidates submitting names into the CSG. We pick one designated, and out of the remaining pool of five, we send forward two names only, right? And the other names that appear in the CSG or appear in any other SG, in essence, are no longer in the candidate pool. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, it is the function of the bottom-up process within each SG to decide who they want to put forward for those names, and those are the names, you know. We were, again, dealing with the possibility that there'd be a large pool, so we had to winnow, right? So, and when you think about how the two houses are going to do a vote, if we gave them an enormous pool to vote from, you could have ended up with the votes divided in such a way that nobody could get anywhere near a majority. So we decided we had to limit it, so we made it two.
So the thing I'm kind of struggling with is the timeline for the evaluators and the council. If the SGs all meet the deadline, all meet a date of the 10th, that gives the that really doesn't give the evaluators much working time.
Thank you, Marilyn Billigan. The whole concept of the evaluation team was something we debated quite a lot, and I was very skeptical about whether we needed to have it in the first instance, but there were others in the drafting team who felt that we should, just in case we had a large pool, so we decided to go with it. But given the time frame, we ended up in this very compressed situation, because obviously the logical thing would be to have this sequenced where the stakeholder groups put forward their names, then the evaluators are able to take a few days, put forward some suggestions, and then that helps the council to vote. Instead, we're having to essentially move in parallel. There's no way around it because of the deadlines we have. Now, the pool is not so large that that will be so problematic. The evaluation team has already started looking at the pool. And we should also be clear about what the evaluation team is doing. Initially, it was suggested by some in the drafting team that the evaluation team should rank the candidates by some criteria, i.e., the types of criteria that the GNSO and ICANN specified in the call for applicants. I think one or two other people also had some real problems with that. I mean, I couldn't see how objectively you could really disaggregate people and do rankings according to such things as team spirit, willingness to learn, things like that. It just didn't seem very realistic to me to try to do that in any way, and I thought that if we tried to assign some sort of ranking like that, that essentially we would probably be opening ourselves up to post hoc criticism. So we decided that essentially we would be making a more sort of holistic overall assessment of an applicant's fit with the general tenor of the requirements specified by ICANN and the GNSO. Now, those, of course, and the assessments that we put forward don't have any particular weight. The stakeholder groups, the houses, will vote however they're going to vote. This is simply advisory. This is in the event that people don't want to take the time to read all the files, and they just want to know essentially what if people who've been looking at this more closely, what is their assessment. So we are going to try in the evaluation team to, if we can, identify one candidate for each of the two slots that we think is particularly outstanding, or at least have some kind of rough ranking that here's three people that are particularly strong, etc. But really, in this first instance, the evaluation team's assessment is going to have to be pretty flexible in its construction and flexibly interpreted by the council when it comes to voting. I mean, I think I really wouldn't attach too much weight to the evaluation team operation in this instance. It may be in future review team rounds, we have a bigger pool, we have more of a need for the ET to be doing this kind of assessment, and there will be a different time frame within which the ET will be able to function after having received inputs from stakeholder groups. But given the way all this is working this time, it's really seat of the pants. So it's just one more piece of information. It's a data point.
Okay, Bill, it's Marilyn again. Just one more clarification. Because you said the guidance, the SGs will vote as they're going to vote. But actually, in this, for those two seats, it is the council that votes, right? For those two names, not seats. For those two names, it is the council that votes, not the SGs. The SGs no longer have input.
Well, the council, the two houses vote, but obviously the SGs constitute the houses, so they're people. It's, you know, it's however they vote that's going to determine whether or not somebody gets a simple majority and gets accepted.
Let me see if I can clarify my misunderstanding. The councilors from the two houses vote.
Yes.
So not the houses.
So my apologies.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear.
Councillors from the two houses. Yes,
okay.
The councillors vote. And the councillors should have received guidance from their stakeholder groups about their preferences. That's the idea. So in other words, for example, NCSG, we will look at the pool, we'll go through the names, we'll talk with people about how do you feel about these different candidates. They'll provide us with guidance, and then the counselors from NCSG will say, okay, fine. Even if those are not NCSG candidates, this one seems strong, we'll vote for him or her.
It's about 5 till 11. We need to end by 11:15 or pretty close on this topic. I see other people have comments, so Mary and who else? No? Somebody else back here have comments or questions? Wolf does? Anyone else? Wolf?
Yeah, thank you. Wolf Ulrich Norman speaking. Drawing your attention back to the timeline, really. So also, Bill pointed out that the SGs would have time until the 14th of March, well, to decide upon their nominations. I would like to encourage all of the SGs, well, to come up earlier in order to facilitate, well, the process for the evaluation team. So because, we don't expect a mass of candidates, but it would help us because the evaluation team has at least to do something for 1 or 2 days. So if he could come to a result, to a nomination within the SG meetings on Tuesday, that would be very helpful.
And may I add one other last point that I didn't get a chance to get into? For the voting itself, now the question becomes, what happens if no candidate wins a majority of both houses for each of the slots? There are essentially two different options, right? I mean, one is we can throw up our hands and say, well, nobody won. And so therefore, we just forward the four names that were pre-allocated by the stakeholder groups to the selectors. The problem with that, in my view, is that's potentially unfair to unaffiliated persons, because you could actually get people making calculations that, well, I really would like my stakeholder group's nominee to be given a stronger chance to be considered by Giannis and Peter, so I don't want to dilute the pool by having six. I'd rather have four. Therefore, I'll vote in such a way as to ensure that no candidate gets to the majority. And that would be unfortunate. I don't know that anybody would actually do that, but again, theoretically, one could say that there are incentives to do that if one wanted to. We do want this to be an open process. We don't want to have it look, especially for an accountability and transparency team, like essentially the stakeholder groups are colluding to control the process, and only people approved by the stakeholder groups can be forwarded as GNSO nominees. There really ought to be a fair opportunity for people who are involved in or identify with the GNSO but yet are not strongly plugged into the stakeholder groups to be taken seriously as candidates. So my suggestion has been in the ET discussions, and I think we haven't resolved this with finality yet, that if the first vote doesn't yield a simple majority of both houses for anybody, that there we should then have a little bit of recalibration and do a second vote and try and see if the threat of having to continue at this doesn't kind of spur people to maybe compromise, shift their votes, say, okay, well, this person fell just short. He or she is good enough for me. I'm willing to throw my vote to them. You do a second round, and hopefully we get to an outcome. I think it would be better for us if the houses can agree to put names forward for those two slots than to not put names forward. It's my own view.
And I have a final question, maybe a final question. What process is the council, are the councilors using for these votes? Is this a secret ballot or an open discussion on the microphone with a transcript or what?
I tried to start that conversation, and I haven't been able to get a lot of takers of the ET interested in specifying it. I think that people feel like we can do this pretty open. You know, it's a pretty small pool of names, and I think people are inclined to just do an open vote on the council call.
Okay. Any other comments or questions about this topic? I will just make a response to Wolf on. I will just make a response to Wolf on whether the CSG is going to make a decision on Tuesday, and I will say at this point, this topic is not on the CSG agenda on Tuesday because so many of our members are not present here. So the CSG is going to have to work out a friendlier time slot. We do have one tentatively scheduled at 6 p.m. Nairobi time, 10 a.m. East Coast, 4 p.m. Europe. So Wolf's employment to us to make a decision on Tuesday is taken, but he's going to, you know, that's where we are. Other comments?
Hi, this is Ajamil. Bill, I can't see you because there's a pillar between you and me. But nonetheless, let me ask this question because you may have... Hey, hi. There are some people who may belong to certain SGs who have applied as independents or non-affiliates. And I don't know where to have this discussion, so I'm going to ask, how do we feel about them from different people not identifying from those stakeholder groups, but being members and wishing to be evaluated for selection by the selectors apart from the GNSO? Just a question.
Zahid, you read my mind because that was the last point I wanted to come to, but I didn't want to bogart the microphone too much, as we used to say back in my day. This has been a point of some discussion as well. We did agree in the council on a procedure for allocating candidates to the slots, and that is in the action plan, and one has to assume that the council's agreement on this makes that the definitive approach. The agreement was, in the first instance, we ask candidates to say in their application which stakeholder group or constituency they feel most closely affiliated with. If the volunteer is unclear about or chooses not to identify his or her affiliate, I'm reading now, the council will follow the procedure outlined below. Council knowledge of membership in a stakeholder group or constituency, we assume association with that stakeholder group constituency. Council knowledge of membership in the ALAC environment, we assume association with ALAC, although the ALAC people said, hey, wait a minute, we have our own process, which I fully understand. No known membership of any affiliation or connection to either the stakeholder group or constituency, we assume and treat them as unaffiliated. Now, we've already had one case in the pool of somebody who says, I am a member of a given constituency, however, I wish to be treated as an independent. Now, this raises questions, obviously. If you allow that process, then you could get people gaming as follows. Well, my guess is that the competition for the unaffiliated slot is thinner, so therefore I want to say that I'm an unaffiliated person to increase my chances of being a nominee. We decided, I think, in the original process that if there was knowledge that a person is a member of a stakeholder group or a constituency, that they would be allocated to that, and that's the deal, I think. Now, if that person is a member of a constituency or stakeholder group that they believe is not going to support their candidacy, you know, sorry. On the other hand, other people still can vote for them. Unless their name doesn't go forward as one of the two from that group, if they get enough support to be one of the two, they go into the pool and can be considered, and others can vote for them. But, you know, we can't have – I mean, imagine if Marilyn – or Milton, were to say, I have no affiliation. I'm an independent person, and I'd like to be considered for a review team.
I'm a globally cosmic person.
I recognize your intergalactic characteristics, Marilyn, but nevertheless, I think we tend to believe that you're with the CSG. So, I mean, we can't really have people... who are identifiably members of groups saying they're not members of the group. It doesn't make sense.
Thanks, Bill. That does clarify quite a bit. I think we're getting to where I thought we were going to get to. But there was no discussion between me and Bill about this, so there's no cross stakeholder group. But I just wanted to ask a question. I understand this addresses how we're going to vote within the GNSO. But if am I mistaken in understanding the people who are actually saying we should not be, that they should be considered unaffiliated or independent, are basically asking that selectors directly look at them. And so there's really nothing that we can do. And if there's really nothing we can do, and I could be wrong about this, is there something we would like to do to be able to sort of convey our or communicate our thoughts on this, as you've stated?
Could you clarify what you mean by there's nothing we can do?
Sorry, Bill. You can do anything.
Actually, can I jump in
here? No, I don't understand what you're asking, Saeed.
No, what I meant was that there's a group of people out there who have applied directly to ICANN, right, as volunteers. It really doesn't help him. I can't see him right now, but they've applied directly to ICANN. Some of them who are GNSO-related will come to us. Those who are not GNSO-related will either not come to us or we won't even nominate them. Fine. But they're still out there. They're still volunteers, which the selectors will have to either reject or accept. And I'm just wondering about that process. And do we have views and feelings and anything we wish to communicate to the board, et cetera, or the selectors about that process, that this is X person who has tried to bypass the GNSO process? How do we feel about that?
I think Mary has a comment, and then...
And actually, it's more of a question. I just wanted to say that really was my question. We're looking at the gap, really, because the way it goes is everybody applies to ICANN, but there's potentially people who are going to apply to ICANN whom, within the GNSO and within the council, we might be able to fairly say we could attribute this person to X group. But this person said, I'm not seeking GNSO endorsement. And I think that was your question. It was also my question. And the follow-up is this something that we obviously can discuss it, but do we just discuss it and the council basically says, since they're not seeking GNSO endorsement, we will just leave it to the selectors to make the best choice, or should we also make a recommendation even though that's not within our remit?
So I'm going to make a comment and just do a time check here. I have 7 minutes after, which means we need to wrap up because we're going to start another topic and turn it over to the council vice chair. But I'm going to make a comment about what you just said, Mary. I think it would be mythical for me to assert that I am not affiliated with the CSG. But I also think that the CSG or the NCSG or the registries or registrars, so maybe I'll say this differently, the SGs and the houses, I think, recognize if people are being actively engaged within their work. And I think you guys ought to think about saying so. That's my personal view. We need to do a wrap-up so that we can move to the next topic. I've just been given the privilege of announcing we're closing this session and we're having a short break in between. So is there anything else that you need to announce about the logistics?
Sorry.
Is there anything else you need to announce about the logistics for the change? Okay, so this call is closed. You get 5 minutes, and we're going to change the phone bridge, and there are instructions from Marika that you need to dial back in to the different bridge, and each session has its own password so that there's a separate transcript for each session. And the passcode for this upcoming session is who is?